Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Today's podcast, we're whittling down the season previews, but this is another one of the season previews. We're going to be discussing my very own Chicago Bulls. And when I say we are going to be discussing the Chicago Bulls, I am joined by the one and only Matthew Smith. Matt, how are you going?
Very well, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. Now, if anybody doesn't know, please let them know where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @SmanSports.
S-Man Sports, of course. Go and follow Matt over there. We're doing Chicago Bulls, Matt, and I'm repping the Bulls, as you can see if you're watching this. I've got my Bulls t-shirt on, Chicago, ready to go. That's great for an audio format, but this is on video as well, so you can check out my Bulls t-shirt there. This is my team, Matt. Doesn't cloud my fantasy judgment. In fact, the Bulls are probably a team I've had the least amount of players from over the course of my fantasy career. I drafted Derrick Rose this year in the Red Rock Dynasty League. How have you recovered since then? Did you have to go into an IV to rehydrate?
I'm still worn out. That was tiring. That was 4 hours of full-on drafting.
It went for 4.5 hours, and then I had to spend 2 hours editing the podcast, and then I uploaded it, and when it got to the end of the upload, it said, sorry, it's too long, so I had to go back and split it into two parts, and it seriously was a 12-hour undertaking to get the podcast up, to do the draft. It was big. It was super fun. I've never done a draft like that. Have you ever been involved in anything as big as that?
Never. That was as deep as I've ever been, salaries involved, the auction draft, and now we've got to work out contracts, whether it's a 1, 2, 3, or 4 year deal. So I'm even having sleepless nights trying to work out contract lengths for these guys. So yeah, and we're still 7 weeks from the season.
Yeah, there's still, and you know, I'm hearing from all these guys in the league that they're fielding draft choices. And Matt, that's something else that I threw out there for the league as well, is that we're going to do some, well, I think we should do it, unless anyone's got some objections to it, that we're going to do draft pick protections and pick swaps in trades. So that should make an extra wrinkle that should make negotiating a real treat.
As long as I'm allowed to agree and do a handshake and then change my mind at the last minute, as long as that's included in the league,
sure,
like DeAndre Jordan style, I'm okay.
We're trying to keep things as close to the NBA as possible. So red negging is huge up on my things that we want to do. We're going to talk Bulls though, Matt. We're going to stop talking Dynasty League. But before we do that, I want to give a quick shout out to anybody in the States who's watching this, because it is 4:30 a.m. Eastern time. So if you are up and watching this, please send me a tweet. Just send me a message. If I know there are people watching, I'm assuming they're all in Australia. But if you are in the States and you're watching this, go to sleep. Because unless there's something that's making you awake at this time. But shout out if you are watching. Matt, the Bulls. Okay, they were good. They were better than good last season. But in terms of their offseason, they did nothing. They re-signed their own guys. They didn't bring anyone in. They didn't really lose anybody. Nothing changes. But do they get better from where they were last season? Because it was a pretty disappointing exit from them, losing to an undermanned Cleveland team in that second round of the playoffs. Do they get better?
I'm not sure if they get better. They're going to be around the same mark. I think Cleveland, you'd have to say, depending on Kyrie Irving's knee and health, you have to say once they get a full strength team back, they're going to be better. Washington didn't really make any moves. Atlanta got a little bit worse, losing Damari Carroll, and didn't really make any moves there either. So they're still going to be in that sort of hunt for the second, third, fourth seed at the top of the Eastern Conference there.
I'd say that's probably accurate. You'd think that they'd be one of the favorites for that second seed. I don't think that's too crazy to say that. But you're hoping for some internal improvement. You're hoping that Derrick Rose stays healthy. That's something we hope every year. But he looked really good in the playoffs. You're hoping he carries some of that across. You're hoping we get a big improvement for Nikola Mirotic. We're hoping Doug McDermott shows a big improvement. We hope Jimmy Butler takes his game to another step forward. We hope Taj Gibson and Joakim Noah have a bit of a bounce back or injury-free seasons. There's a lot of hope where you can see it and go, yeah, they could be better. But there's also, you can look on the other side and go, well, these things could all go wrong and they could get worse because they didn't necessarily bring in anybody to make them better. It's all going to be internal improvement or regression. We're still waiting to see that. So normally, Matt, we'd cover who are the key additions and the key losses to this team, but there's nobody. There's literally nobody to talk about in terms of key veteran additions. Let's go straight into the young players, though. Bobby Portis. I really like Bobby Portis. I think you're a fan of Bobby Portis, but there is zero chance of him getting any sort of look in unless a few injuries happen in this front court. What's your take on Portis for this season or in dynasty leagues moving forward?
Yeah, this season he's definitely going to need a trade or a couple of injuries to see some playing time behind Fabregas, so Nikola Mirotic, Taj Gibson there. I like him as a long-term prospect, a hustle guy. I think the Bulls got a really good pick there at 22 in the draft. But yeah, for the next year and probably 2 years, can't see him getting a real lot of playing time, unfortunately.
That's the thing. He's stuck behind Pau Gasol, Nikola Mirotic, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, the fifth big man on the roster. He looked really impressive at Summer League, hit threes, which I wasn't expecting him to do. Rebounding, energy guy, super just back and forward, really fast, really aggressive. He's running and he's rebounding, he's shot blocking, which is all going to be great when it translates into fantasy. But we're probably talking 3 years down the track, maybe when Pau Gasol gives it away, maybe if Joakim Noah gets traded or leaves in free agency after this season. Taj Gibson, he's getting older. He might move on. You have to think that at some point the Bulls were going to run Nikola Mirotic and Bobby Portis as two of their main big men, although I doubt that either of them can really play center. They'd be a very small ball center, but they're going to be two big pieces moving forward. And if you're investing for the future, you don't want to pay too much for Portis because you're not going to get any output this season, and you're not going to get a huge amount of output next season, most likely. It's a future investment, but he could turn into a very, very decent and a very good fantasy player. What about Doug McDermott? He struggled last season, and there's a number of things we can put down to that. He did have an injury, and he had to deal with Tom Thibodeau, who is, you know, a really, really bad coach in terms of rookies. Not a bad coach. He's a really good coach. But in terms of playing his rookies, he just goes, you know what, mate, you're a rookie. Just forget about it. Don't bother coming. He played 36 games, 9 minutes a game. Considering the Bulls didn't lose anyone, considering nothing changes with their roster, how do you see McDermott, you know, looking this season? Where does he, start to take minutes away from Mike Dunleavy? Does he take a step? Do you think that Fred Hoiberg is going to use him in a better way than what Thibodeau did, and he starts to become a relevant player?
Well, that's the big unknown with this team, is what Fred Hoiberg is going to come in and bring to the Bulls. We've sort of heard talk around he's going to increase the offensive tempo and make them run a little bit more, and the chance that Mirotic starts. I really think Doug McDermott can push Mike Dunleavy for that small forward position. Dunleavy's now 35 years old. McDermott's a really good shooter, perimeter shooter, so he's a good fit there to allow Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler get into the paint, and Pau Gasol and Noah, if he gets some playing time there at centre, to really work in and around the paint. So at the moment, it's probably still Dunleavy because he does bring that veteran presence, and while they're still in a championship mode, it's probably still Dunleavy. But if they start to fall down the standings and they want to go into not necessarily a rebuild mode, but a rejuvenation mode where they're going to bring in some of these young guys, I really like Doug McDermott's prospects for the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, look, there is I agree with you. I don't think he's overtaking Dunleavy this season, but I think he can. He could go and double his minutes output from last season. He can get up to 15 minutes a game this season. That's not going to be relevant for standard leagues. But with an injury to Dunleavy, I don't think Hoiberg is going to have any hesitation in putting McDermott in the starting lineup and running him out there decent minutes. I think that from everything I've heard about Fred Hoiberg and his offense at Iowa State is it's going to suit McDermott a lot, and he's going to really, really benefit from this. And he played very well at Summer League. He played a lot of four. He's not going to get minutes at the four, really, on this team with the amount of big men they've got. But he wasn't just shooting. He was scoring aggressively on drives and inside as well, which is something that he definitely needs to do in his game. He can't just be a spot-up shooter because he's never going to develop into a great player if he's just a spot-up shooter. But the steps that he took in that area, that's great. The problem in his game is I just don't know in terms of fantasy numbers. Like his per 36 numbers last year, they weren't great. They were 12 points, 1.5 threes, which is fine, but then you got 0.7 assists per 36 minutes. That's horrible. That's Nikola Pekovic horrible. 0.4 steals, 0.1 blocks, 4.8 rebounds. Like, these are not good numbers. Now, we'd expect a bit of a bump in some of these areas, but he's just not known for getting those other categories. His assists, steals, blocks are going to be very low throughout his career. So that's going to limit him in terms of his fantasy production probably throughout his career. So that's something to keep in mind if you're investing heavily in him in a dynasty-type league, is that we're probably going to see very limited volumes of those categories. The other young player on this team who's been drafted in the last 2 years, Cameron Bairstow, one of our countrymen, Matt, he looked a lot better than I thought he would in Summer League, but barely saw the court again last season. He's going to be in a similar situation, though, this season. Unlike McDermott, who'll get a bigger role, Besto, he's barely going to see the court as the sixth big man. Is there any future for him in the NBA? This could be the last roll of the dice for him.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately to say, it might just be about last opportunity. We're talking about Joe Ingles before and his future now. I think, yeah, unfortunately, Cam Besto is more suited to Europe. I'm just not convinced that he has, not what it takes, but just the skill set and the game to even crack the rotation at the NBA level.
He can hit an NBA three, which is something I didn't expect from him. So that's something he's got going for him. But there's so much in terms of in front of him in Chicago. Maybe he catches on with another team, but I'd be doubtful with that. Before we go any further, Matt, I do want to mention something unrelated to the Chicago Bulls. I want to talk about Red Rock Listener Leagues. Now, I know the other leagues, if you've been playing in the other leagues, I can't enter the results yet onto ESPN because they still haven't allowed offline results to be entered. But I want to announce something here, Matt, that we spoke about briefly before. I want to do a Red Rock Roto League. All the other leagues are head-to-head. I want to do a Red Rock Listener League Rotisserie League for this season. So if you are interested in joining the Red Rock Roto Listener League, let me know. And the place you can let me know, I want you to head across to YouTube. I want you to leave a comment on YouTube there and tell me why you should be in. Tell me why you want to get in. It could be funny, it could be serious, whatever. Leave a comment on the YouTube video why you want to be in the Red Rock Roto League.
I thought you were going to say they have to make a video.
No, don't tell me. You have to go onto my YouTube and you have to leave a comment on this video, on the Chicago Bulls preview video. I want you to go and leave a comment on the video stating your interest in the Red Rock Roto Listener League. The settings are undetermined at this point. We'll work all that out. But at this point, it is going to be a rotisserie league. Everything else is a head-to-head league. This will be a rotisserie league. So anybody who wants into that, please let me know on YouTube. And then I'll have another listener league announcement a little bit later on, which is slightly less set in stone, but it's going to be an interesting one. Now,
so there's another draft where the listeners can snipe our picks. That sounds like awesome fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a downside of producing our content and producing podcasts and videos is that when you say you like someone, everyone really, really nails in on that and zeroes in on that and knows who you want. So in the Dynasty League, when Victor Oladipo went up, all the comments in the chat was like, this is Josh's guy, Josh Bid. When Nikola Mirotic went up, someone who may have been broadcasting the auction draft live may have said, everyone bid up on Mirotic because Matt wants him. It's a real. It is a bit of an issue, but hey, it's fun anyway.
Cost me an extra $10.
Hey, well, you've got Nikola Mirotic now for the next however many seasons, so you should be happy with that. Just it's all strategy, Matt. And if we are, and unfortunately, we don't know everyone else's player likes and infatuations, but they all know ours. And it does get used against our advantage, especially when I'm putting guys in my draft queue and then I realize that I'm actually streaming that draft queue to everyone, and then Scotty Wilbekin and Thomas Satoransky get picked from under my nose. So thank you for that. And thanks to whoever actually let me know that was out there, because otherwise I never would have realized that draft queue was being broadcast to everybody.
But he let you know about 3.5 hours into the draft.
Yeah, after the guys had been taken. All right, breakout players. I reckon I'm pretty confident of who your player is going to be for this section, but who's the guy that's going to go from a good to a great player, an irrelevant player to a decent role player? Who is the guy that is going to be the breakout player for the Chicago Bulls this season?
Yeah, there's only got to be one guy, and that's Tony Snell. No, I hate Nikola Mirotic. I don't know what you guys are talking about, me hyping him up. No, Nikola Mirotic, his season last year, or second half of the season last year, post All-Star, 26 minutes per game. He averaged 16 points, 6 rebounds, 0.9 steals, 0.9 blocks, 1.7 threes, 82% from the free throw line. As I mentioned earlier, looks like he'll be the starting power forward next to Pau Gasol. He'll thrive in Fred Hoiberg's up-tempo offense. We've seen some video of how Hoiberg uses his versatile power forwards, and it just suits Nikola Mirotic perfectly. Playing time, there is that slight concern that you've been worried about, Josh, in terms of Gasol, Noah and Gibson and how they all fit in, but I think you should see around the 28 minutes over the first couple of months and then pick that up to 30 minutes sort of after Christmas and once the calendar ticks over into 2016. So everyone who follow me is on Twitter knows my love and affection for Nikola Mirotic, and I'll, without wanting to hype him up too much again, just this small sample size in March, where he played 15 games, and he did average those 30 minutes a game. He averaged 20 points, 7.5 rebounds, 1.2 blocks, 0.8 steals, 1.7 threes, shot 83% from the free throw line on 7 attempts, if you don't mind. Now, they're pretty decent numbers in anyone's books. But if you look at the guys who have averaged those sort of numbers, so 20 points, 7 rebounds, 1 three, and 1 block across a whole season, there's only 5 guys who have ever done it. One of those, Scottie Pippen, speaking of the Bulls, back in 94 and 95, and then most recently, Sean Marion, Dirk Nowitzki, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant. So
it's pretty lofty company.
Pretty good names, fantasy names over the past 10 years. So I know it's a small sample size, but Nikola Mirotic has got this very, very unique fantasy game.
He's a horrible defender, which is something that might limit his playing time. And actually, a good question came in on the Basketball Monster forum from Dacine. And he says, can you make a case for Mirotic not getting 30-plus minutes per year? Now, I've been doing that for a lot of the season. I've currently got him projected right on 30, but there is a massive chance that he goes under 30 minutes. As you mentioned, Matt, you know, Joakim Noah's going to get minutes. Taj Gibson is going to get minutes. Bobby Portis might push himself and have to force himself into some sort of minutes. And Pau Gasol, he was dominant at Eurobasket. He was the MVP of Eurobasket. He tore Rudy Gobert a new one in the game against France with a 40-point performance. These guys are all deserving of big minutes. So Mirotic getting less than 30 minutes it's a huge possibility. He's not a lock for that. And I have been worried about him in that sense for a big chunk of the season or of the off season when I've been talking about him. Now I've been reading a lot and looking a lot at Hoiberg's stuff and thinking, yeah, he probably gets right on 30, but I don't think he goes very much over 30, if at all. I think that some nights will be 32, some nights will be 27. I think that, you know, 30 is the limit for him, and that is going to put an artificial cap on his fantasy production. Now, in saying that, when he's got an average draft position of 115 on Yahoo, you're very comfortable taking him inside of that, even if he only gets 28 minutes a night. He's a clear player who's inside the, or I'll let you fill the number, he's inside the top what?
Well, it varies on your league. I was going to ask you the same question. In a competitive league, like maybe the Red Rock Roto League, or a head-to-head leg, depending on your strategy, where would you take him? You're taking him 50, 60, 70? I'm still not convinced about top 50, but just outside around 60, if he's fitting what I want to do, I wouldn't hesitate in taking Nikola Mirotic there.
All right, with my current projections in terms of his minutes at 30, I have his head-to-head rank at 43rd and his roto rank at 42nd. I would not take him inside the top 50, though, just because that's probably a best-case scenario, given all the unknowns at the moment. And you know, with everything currently projected that way, it looks like he'll be in that spot, but I don't think there's much room for him to go up from there. So I'd rather take him at 50 to 55, that sort of zone. I think that's probably the right spot to take him. If for some reason you get him in the 60s or the 70s, it's a real bonus. But I'd be okay getting him in the after pick 50. I think that's probably the zone that I want to do. And think that, yeah, then that gives me a little bit of space that he could become a top 45, a top 40 player. I don't want to grab him at pick 40 and then hope that his best case scenario is pick 37 or pick 40. Because there's not a huge amount of value in that. And there is that downside that maybe he only plays 27 minutes. Or maybe he only plays 26 minutes. And then he becomes a top 80 sort of player. So that's where I look at him. Probably a 55 to 60 range, I say, is probably the best spot for Nikola Mirotic at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think drafting Mirotic, I still think we're going to have to play that long-term game. If he doesn't get 30 minutes in the first 6 weeks of the season and he's 25, 26 and his numbers are average and below expectations, I don't think that's a major concern, because I think come towards the end of the season when Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah start to wear down a bit, that's when Mirotic's minutes will come back up.
I've got an interesting stat for Nikola Mirotic. In the games last season where he played over 30 minutes a game, not necessarily starting, but over 30 minutes a game, he averaged 20.1 points a game, 9.1 rebounds a game, over 2 three-pointers a game, 1.3 blocks a game. Like, they're really good numbers. Now, the steals, he was at about 0.7 steals a game, which is still pretty good. And for you guys who play in nine category leagues, he was at 2 turnovers a game, which is not, it's not too high, it's not too low, it's manageable. So, in big minutes, he was putting up really, really impressive numbers. And over the course of the season, his per 36 numbers, 18.2, 2.2 threes, 8.8 rebounds, over a steal, over a block. The poor field goal percentage is not ideal, and that could be, if he doesn't improve that, that's a situation where as a big man, a guy shooting 41% is not good. And that could be a drag, and it could be a punt situation potentially with the sort of negative he has in the Z score in that category, where you project that negative as like 1.63 means you need some big volume guys to really bring him back from that area. But it's not complete. It's not DeAndre Jordan territory. It's not that sort of area. But it is pretty bad for a power forward to shoot that low. So that is a downside of his game. What about sleepers? It's Mirotić to me as a sleeper in terms of ADP at 115. There's tremendous value there. But do you see anybody else as a sleeper on this team?
Not really. There's no way Mirotić should fall outside of the top 100. And I think his ADP is that low because Yahoo have him ranked at 100. Yep. Is it 123 or something silly? So those rankings should change as we get closer to the season. So if you are drafting in the next couple of weeks, go ahead and grab him at 70 and 80 and you're still going to have yourself a bargain. But I can't really see anyone else. Jimmy Butler's going to return value sort of between 10 and 15, end of the first, early second round. Derek Rose, it's hard to peg because he is so injury prone. Doug McDermott, if he gets the minutes, but that's going to be hard to see. And then we've got Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah. So I think most of the other guys there in that Bulls roster and on their rotation are pretty spot on in terms of their value. You know what you're going to get with those guys.
Yep. Now, I also want to clear something else up that Dacine mentioned in that comment about Mirotić before. He says that when I'm talking about guys in terms of their rankings, I say that when they get outside the top 100, you can take a bit of a flyer. And I probably should have clarified this earlier, but I'm talking more ESPN leagues. When you're outside the top 100, that means that you're into your last three roster spots, so your bench spot, so you can take a bit of a risk. In a Yahoo league who goes 12 teams, at pick 100, you're only in round 8. So you're not in that sort of situation. You want to get some upside guys, but you're not taking necessarily a flyer at pick 100. You're more looking, I should probably phrase it as in your last three rounds, that's when you can take a flyer because they're the guys you're going to tend to drop. Not necessarily in round 8. You're not going to be dropping, your five worst players throughout the city. You might, but you might not necessarily be doing it. So I just made to put that clarification out there that when I'm saying, as a flyer outside pick 100, I'm really meaning in your last three rounds. So depending on if you're in a 12-team or a 10-team league, that's what I mean there. So thank you, Dacine, for pointing that out. I didn't realize the confusion there. I'm just used to speaking about ESPN leagues, but with Yahoo leagues, it does push that back another 20 or so picks. So just thought I'd clear that up. What about the other side of things, Matt? Busts. Who is overvalued?
I don't want to say this, and I've written about Pau Gasol in my power forward positional tiers, which will be out in the next 24 to 48 hours. So I'll give you a little bit of a sneak preview about my comments around Pau Gasol, but I've got this really bad feeling that the last 12 months are going to catch up with him. And by that, I mean, he played 34 minutes per game across 78 regular season games last season.
Yep.
He played 32 minutes a game across 10 playoff games. And now he's been playing 30 minutes per game in 8 Euro basketball games. So to me, eventually that's going to catch up with him. He's now 35 years old. His per game value is still elite. I just think that wear and tear towards the latter part of this season, like I said, is going to catch up with him. And I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but if Pau Gasol ends up with a stress fracture, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Okay, that's interesting. And you're right. He is old. He looked awesome at Eurobasketball. He's playing a ton of basketball, and that could be a problem. His ADP at pick 30 is, I probably wouldn't want to invest in him any earlier than that. And I'd probably be happier letting him slide to about 40, and you might not be able to do that. But sometimes you go into league and people are really hesitant on old guys. You'll see Tim Duncan fall 30 spots. You'll see Dwayne Wade fall 30 spots. You'll see Pau Gasol fall into the 40s. And if he falls into the 40s, then I'm all over it. I'm more than happy with that. But if I'm having to pick him inside the top 30, there's a definite risk there.
Yeah, same. If he's into the 40s, then I would definitely consider him. You're probably going to have to compare him with someone like Derek Favors, who's got that younger body and maybe still that room to grow and the potential. But inside the second round, inside the top 25, top 30, I personally can't do it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, the other guy that I'm a little bit down on that people aren't down on is Jimmy Butler. I think that him at an ADP of 16, I'm a bit worried that he's going to – a lot of his value came from high minutes. Now, there'll probably be a bit more up-tempo on offense, but I think he's going to – his minutes are going to be reduced by 2 or 3 minutes, and that could be an important thing. I just – for a head-to-head league, if you're picking him inside the top 15, I don't love him at that pick. In a roto league, I'm all about it. I'm okay with grabbing him, you know, quite early inside the second round. In a head-to-head league, I'm not so sure that I really want to get Jimmy Butler. What does he do well?
Well, this is the issue. He doesn't do one thing well. His points are good. His steals are good. 6 rebounds from a shooting guard position is not bad. He's got a very good free throw percentage, 83% on 7 attempts last year, and he hits a three. He's very solid across the board, 1.4 turnovers. So if you're playing in a 9-cut league, he won't hurt you there. I still like him, even in that 10 to 15 range. I agree with you that his minutes will drop, but I think the up-tempo offense will counteract that, and we'll still see solid stats across the board. In head-to-head league, Chicago do have a very, very good playoff schedule for head-to-head leagues, if you want to look that far ahead. But there's a lot of risk and uncertainty around a few guys in that 10 to 15 range in terms of Kyrie Irving and his knee, Paul George coming back from injury. There's still issues around Carmelo Anthony. I can't draft him in the top 15. Do you go with Blake Griffin and put yourself behind in blocks and steals and free throw percentage? So there's still a lot of question marks. Jimmy Butler's not the most durable guy either. Exactly. He's only played 65-67 games over the last 2 seasons. So there's that risk there as well with Jimmy Butler. But I think out of those guys, for me, he's probably the safest and someone who you can build a nice, solid team around. So I wouldn't hesitate drafting Jimmy Butler at the end of the first or early second round.
Would you take him over Rudy Gobert?
No. I'm a massive – if there's someone I love as much as Nikola Mirotic, it's Rudy Gobert. And to have the massive field goal percentage, rebounds, blocks, and a free throw percentage, which I don't think will hurt you as much. It was 63% last year. He's been shooting around, what did I tweet out? 60, I don't know. I don't know what I tweet anymore. 65 or 70. I think 70. Nearly 70%. Yeah. In the Euro tournament. So there's no reason to punt that category. So Jimmy, if, Rudy Gobert is there at pick 10, 11, 12, I would definitely take him.
Butler's strongest point is his steals, and that's going to be the biggest thing that carries him. He's going to have nice points. He's going to have, you know, nice free throw percentage. He's not going to really hurt you in any areas, but he's just not doing anything fantastically well. And that can be okay for a second round pick, but it depends on how you've built your team. If you want to really go hard and just, you know, just bang out a couple of categories, he's not a guy to really do that. He's not a guy to give you, you know, big numbers in certain categories, and it really does depend on the way that you're building your team in terms of whether he is worth that second round pick. There's a case to be made that, you know, if you look at, you know, devaluing some of his, if you turn off his steals in a punt steals format, he drops significantly. Like, his value drops, you know, really, really far. He's a guy that I'm probably going to, like, I've got him, I think, in the Red Rock Listener League, but from just from looking things and going through these projections, I'm a bit down on him in a head-to-head league this season, and I probably, if I had my time again, I wouldn't be taking a second-round pick on him. As much as I do like him.
Do you want to trade him?
Who for? I'll look at it once the roster's open. I'll be all for it. Maybe.
I've already offered you Kyrie for him.
You did, didn't you?
This isn't official, by the way. This is just discussions.
That's interesting. I'll get back to you on that. I will look into that a bit closer. But I am. That's interesting.
Who would you take now? I would not take Kyrie Irving if I had picked, what was it, 10 or 11, I think, and I chose Kyrie. Right now, I wouldn't do that pick again. Who would you take in hindsight? I think it was pick 17 you had to pair with Boogie Cousins.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm going to bring it up because I don't remember even who was available at that point. So if you want to bear with me while I just bring up this list. I can't even find the draft list.
I thought Rudy Gobert at 14 in that draft, and I was stoked to get him there, and that's partly because whoever was picking at 12 went the DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond route back to back.
Yep. So the guys who went straight after him, Paul Millsap, Marc Gasol, LaMarcus Aldridge, Rudy Gay, Gordon Hayward, Eric Bledsoe. I probably would have taken Bledsoe, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm very high on Bledsoe this season.
But then would you still punt assist with Eric Bledsoe?
Yeah, because he's not a massive assist guy.
5 or 6 a game.
Yeah, look, maybe I wouldn't have, because DeMarcus Cousins and him joined up together. Maybe I wouldn't have.
There might be an assist a game right there.
Millsap would have been a decent option, I think, there. No, look, it's a tough one. Back half of the second round I'm okay with. The front half is where I'm a little bit worried. So, look, in this league, just for reference, Rudy Gobert, you got him at 14, then Paul George at 15, Kawhi Leonard went after that, Damian Lillard went after that, Serge Ibaka, Klay Thompson, you know, all those guys, maybe not Serge Ibaka. You know, it depends. If I really wanted some blocks, then I'm okay getting Serge Ibaka, because, again, he's doing something really elite without hurting percentages. Lillard definitely, Kawhi definitely, Gobert definitely. I'd have all those guys over Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Who's he there? I'm trying to see if I had... Oh, yes. Now, another loser. That's a bad segue. Another guy who's overvalued heading into drafts. I think Taj Gibson, he's being picked at 141. I'm not spending a standard league pick on Taj Gibson, are you?
No way.
No.
What's his ranking there?
Well, I've got him ranked outside the top 200.
What's his rank on Yahoo?
Don't know, because I don't have Yahoo up. I'll bring that up for you, but it's not great. It can't be that high, can it? Well, maybe it is. Where is it? But I can't see him having relevance. I don't know. Maybe I'm misreading this. Maybe he's gonna put up a big. His O rank is 163. His O rank 163. His rank is 120. So people are looking. The O rank is what it starts off at 163. So people are going, nah, the O rank's wrong. Let's go 40 spots higher on Taj Gibson. I don't understand that.
No, there's no. The only reason why you'll take Taj Gibson if you think he's seriously getting traded and he's going to a better spot.
Exactly, and it's so hard to draft predicting a trade. Like, you could have drafted Reggie Jackson last season and held on to him all season, but he was brutal for 4 months. And yes, he was great once he got traded, but you had a zero as a roster spot basically for 4 months, and it's really, and that's great. Yeah, he's good. He's playing, and he was good for the last 2 months of the season, which is 1 month of fantasy. And because you got a zero out of that spot all season, yeah, are you even in the playoffs? Probably not.
It won me a listener league.
Yeah, but that was also 300 players deep, so you could afford to draft him and hold on to him. Like, you weren't going to drop him when there's 300 guys rostered. But in a standard league, I carried him
for eight for the whole season. My back's still sore.
But if you're in a standard league, holding on to someone who's ranked outside the top 200 for 4 months is pointless.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
There's no need to do it, and I think that's the situation that Taj is going to be in. And you hope that when you get to February, he goes to a different situation. It's not worth it. In saying that, I move on to these guys who are limited by their playing time and who would be a great player if they got big fantasy minutes. And Taj Gibson's the guy that I've got here that if he does play, you know you're going to get big block numbers, good field goal percentage on decent volume, okay scoring, big rebounding numbers, and he's going to be a guy that we know that when he starts, he becomes useful. He doesn't become fantastic, but he becomes quite useful. Who do you see as a guy, another guy on this team, who if they got starters minutes, 30-plus minutes, that they would be a really good fantasy guy?
Yeah, I know you read out his numbers earlier on and they don't seem to project that well, but in the right situation with some natural development a couple of years down the track, I still think Doug McDermott can be an asset to a fantasy team, just in a very, very small sample size. Last season when he played 3 games over 20 minutes, he went 12 points and 5 rebounds with 2 threes, 6 points and 7 rebounds, and then 13 points, 5 rebounds and 3 threes. So if he can put up, you know, low to mid team points, the 5 or 6 rebounds, the couple of threes, do it at a reasonable clip, automatic from the free throw line, you know, turn into a Damari Carroll, Harrison Barnes, you know, late round, small forward glue guy, then he'll be able to play a role for your fantasy team.
Yeah. I believe in Doug McDermott, and I think there is a lot of improvement in him, but the numbers are just, they're a bit scary looking at them, but I do believe in him. I think he can be a pretty decent NBA player. He's going to want to show something a lot more this season than what he showed last season, but I do still believe in him. So, look, we might – that's a realistic situation that we see him in a 30-minute role this year. He could definitely get into that sort of size role and put up numbers. And I wouldn't be shocked. I'm probably not investing in him in any drafts, but he's a name that I'm going to be monitoring. I'm going to be monitoring the Bulls, obviously, because I'm going to be watching them a lot, as I do with all teams. But I'm going to be extra invested to make sure this lottery pick we used last season, you know, pans out, and I want to see him play well. And there is a possibility that he becomes, you know, a really decent player. I'm just, at the moment, I'm just not loving it. Derek Rose, Matt, where is the sweet spot for you where you draft Derek Rose?
Personally, I don't think I will be drafting Derek Rose in my positional tiers for the point guards. I had him in a mid-tier bracket with a number of other guys, some injury-prone guys in there with Deron Williams, Ricky Rubio. I know we shouldn't label him injury-prone, but guys who missed games.
Yep.
Ricky Rubio, I can't remember, but for me, I'll be getting my point guards early like I always do, so I don't have to get Derek Rose or Deron Williams or Ricky Rubio, and then they get injured during the season or halfway during the season. So, where would I recommend? Depends on probably the format and the build. We know his field goal percentage is terrible. I definitely wouldn't be drafting him inside the top 50. If he falls into the 70, 80, 90 range, that's when I'd seriously start, you know, considering him. But yeah, I'm not going out of my way to own Derek Rose, that's for sure.
I drafted him for the first time ever this season in the Dynasty League. Interesting to see how he goes. Hopefully he stays healthy. His current ADP is 58. That feels too high, even though, look, if he plays the whole season or a big chunk of the season in a head-to-head league, I think he can return top 50 value. I don't think he's going to be a top 10 guy, a top 20, or a top 30 guy. I think he sneaks inside the top 50, but there's inherent risk there, so I don't want to take that risk inside the top 50. I don't want to take it probably inside the top 60. I would be looking at him at 70 to 75 plus, and then you can sort of stomach a little bit of risk with a bit of, you know, if you can get a 20 spot upside with a bit of risk, I'm okay with it. It's not great, but I think it's worth doing. But even then, I'm not like, I have to get Derek Rose in the 70s. He's a guy I must get my hands on. I'll be like, if he falls to me and I'm sitting at 78 and I go, you know what, I can do with 20 points and six assists, I might grab Derek Rose. And I've punted field goal percentage because we talked about Nikola Mirotic's field goal percentage. Derek Rose's is going to be in a similar situation on even more attempts, and that's going to be even more impactful to your team, to your team's build and its field goal percentage. So he is someone that you're going to really need to pay attention to in terms of what he does to your field goal percentage. The current way it's projected out at Basketball Monster is it's an interesting case study because Nikola Mirotic is projected to shoot 40% from the field on 12 attempts. Derek Rose is projected to shoot 41.5% on 17 attempts. But the negative impact that Rose has is more than Mirotic's, even though he shoots a better percentage. And that might be hard for some people to get their head around. But it's all to do with means and standard deviation. So even though he shoots a higher percentage than Mirotic, the volume that he shoots, because it's below average, makes him a worse contributor to that category. Is there a better way for me to explain that, Matt? Is that making sense?
Yeah, it is. It's like, I was going to come up with an analogy, but I haven't got one. I was just going to add that if I wanted an injury prone point guard in that sort of 50 to 70 range, I'd much rather draft and own Drew Holiday than I would Derek Rose.
Yep, I can get behind that. I'm a big fan of Drew Holiday. I said I drafted Rose this year, and I think I got him at okay value, but I'm not overspending. If he's sitting there and I go, you know what, I need this at this point, and I want 20 points from a guy, which he can deliver, and there's very few guys at that point of the draft who can deliver 20 points, then I'm sort of okay with that, especially considering the way he sort of ended the season in the playoffs. He was a lot better. He was looking, you know, 75% of MVP Derrick Rose, which we hadn't seen for 4 years' time. So that was a little bit of a positive in terms of what we saw to close out the season. Joakim Noah, horrible last season. I thought he'd be a bit of a bust last season. He was more than a bust. He was really bad. A number of reasons for that. Pau Gasol definitely impacted him. Injuries impacted him. We had a discussion about him a little bit on Twitter today. You see no hope of any sort of bounce back for him. Does he even have standard league value at this point, do you think?
Not for me at the moment. I think he's going to go to that bench role. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but I think his minutes are going to be maybe sort of even in that 20 to 25 range.
Oh wow, you're going that low.
What did he play last season? Minutes
31.
Oh, okay. All right, I won't go that low. I'll go sort of 25, 26 minute range. Which I just don't think that's going to be enough for him to be standard league relevant. Sure, go and use him as a streamer, maybe DFS guy, but for season long, unless there's a Pau Gasol injury, like I mentioned later on down the track, but straight off the bat, at the top of the season, I can't see Noah being owned in that top 120, 130 rankings.
I'm definitely down on him. I mean, you would have to spend a pick in the 20s to get him last year. You're not spending that this year. His ADP is 83. I'm okay with it at that point, especially if you're punting points. Like, he's probably going to average 7 or 8 points a game, but you're going to get big rebounding numbers. You should get 9 rebounds a game, and you're going to get great assist numbers. He's going to give you more assists than a lot of the point guards who are going to be available at that point. He's probably a 4.5 to 5 assist sort of guy, close to a steal, over a block, you know, an okay field goal percentage, a poor free throw percentage, but on small volume. But it's going to be the rebounds, the assists, and the blocks that are really going to carry him. So I'm okay with picking him inside the top 100. There is some risk involved there. I've got him projected at 29 minutes a game. That could come down to 27. I don't see him falling below 27, though, even if he starts or comes off the bench.
If you've got him at 27, 28 minutes, what have you got his line projected at?
6.9 points, 9.2 rebounds, 4.7 assists, 0.8 steals, 1.1 blocks.
Yeah, and percentages?
47 and 66.
So you think he bounces back a little bit? Last year he was at 44 on 60, which just kills you even on that. Even with that low volume. But yeah,
if you look at his career numbers are way higher than that.
Even then, it's still just 9 rebounds, the out of position assist, and a steal and block a game, or around a steal and a block a game. I still think he'd be better off streaming through that position in a head-to-head. Like,
but it's hard for you to get 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and a block from one guy at that point in the draft. There's no one around. Like, and if you can get someone who's not even just a positive contributor, but like a quite a good contributor in a couple of those categories, in 3 categories at that point of the draft, most of those guys are 1 or 2 category guys, and he falls into a 3 category guy for me. So that bumps him a little bit higher there. So that's why I'm a little bit happier taking him inside the top 100, because yeah, around that point, you're looking at 1 or 2 cat guys, and he's going to be a 3 cat guy, I think. And that's sort of my reasoning for that.
I wouldn't draft him over Yusuf Nurkic.
Look, if it came down to it and they were both there, I'd probably take Nurkic, because I'm big on Nurkic. But to be honest, there's probably more risk with Nurkic, because the foul problems were massive. They were huge last season. He just couldn't stay on the court with fouls, and that's going to limit his playing time. He's coming off knee surgery as well. We don't know if he's going to be ready for camp. So there's a risk involved with Nurkic too. Upside-wise, it's all there for Nurkic. I think I probably still would take him, but it's not as clear-cut to me as what it is to you.
I'd even go with the upside of them and the potential of someone like a Myers Leonard at that point.
That depends completely on what you need, though, I think. If you want efficiency and three-pointers, they do completely different things. So you could have him there, and I could be like, I don't need any assists. Joakim Noah, you're ranked 180 now. I need threes. Myers Leonard is going to be the much better option. But if I don't need threes, if I don't need, you know, if I'm punting field goal percentage, then a lot of the value from Myers Leonard comes down. If I'm punting free throws, a lot of his value comes down. So even though they play the same position, they're completely different guys, and it really depends on what I'm going to be looking for and how I've built my previous 8 or 9 picks.
But apart from the assists, instead of Noah, you could stream through someone like Amir Sheik.
Can I not?
And get those 8 or 9 rebounds and, you know, 8 points and hopefully a block or a couple of blocks.
Yeah, I can see that. But those assists are pretty big. They're valuable. 4.5 to 5 assists is valuable from anybody at that point in the draft. Which point guards are going to be around that give you that sort of number? At that
Evan
point.
Turner? Evan Turner?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, well, he'll be around, but then he's going to hurt you in more categories than what Noah hurts you.
If you're drafting Joakim Noah to get 4 or 5 assists, you should have been drafting assists way earlier. You shouldn't be drafting Noah for his assists at that point in the draft.
No.
Get them earlier on.
No, that's true, but it's more just like it depends on how things have panned out, and you might have missed a couple of guys that you wanted, and you just need that extra bump to get your assists back to a comfortable, maybe not even a comfortable level. Maybe your assists are okay, but you want them to be better than okay. And just adding him on rather than adding on someone like Myers Leonard, who's going to drop your assists down from, say your team's averaging 3.5 assists a game across the whole team, and if you add Leonard, it comes down to 3.0, but if you add Noah, it goes up to 3.9, and that gives you an extra buffer then to in your next pick to grab someone who doesn't get assists and helps in some other categories that you might need. It's and we've said this many times, Matt, that rankings and numbers, in the end, it means nothing when you come towards, especially the mid times of the draft. And from pick 30 onwards, these numbers mean nothing. It all depends on what's happened beforehand. And Joakim Noah could have value to someone at pick 70, depending on what they've done, but he could also be valued at pick 150. And same with any of these guys. It all depends on what's come beforehand. Nothing is in a vacuum, unfortunately. But when we do rankings, we all have to do them in vacuums. Who else have we got on this team? Mike Dunleavy. He had his moments last year, but he is strictly a streaming guy, isn't he?
He is. Once again, wrote about him last week in my small 40s. He can put up some reasonable lines every now and then. He can go 20 points, 4 or 5 threes. Every now and then he comes out of the blue and throws out 6 or 7 assists, and you think, geez, where does this come from? But then 2-3 games later, he just does well. Yeah, not a bad streaming guy. The minutes there, the roles there. So that's about it. Standard league relevant in terms of drafting. No streaming option, yes.
What about Tony Snell? People were really onto Tony Snell last year when Jimmy Butler got hurt and was like, let's Tony Snell, everyone add Tony Snell. But basically, he's a guy who scores and does nothing else. And you know, the defense is okay, but even that, like, he doesn't give you big numbers. And I don't really think he's ever going to develop into anything at this point.
No, I'm not sure. And he's still got Kirk Heinrich there as well to share minutes with. So
yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about him or that'll make you angry.
No, he shouldn't get any minutes. I'd rather have Etuan Moore get minutes than Kirk Heinrich, and hopefully that's the case. I don't know. Heinrich's going to be around. Yeah, he's a great leadership guy, all that sort of stuff, but seeing him on the court, it's just not ideal. He's not a good defender. He can't do anything. He's a guy who plays 30, he could play 30 minutes and have 5 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist. And you go, how do you even do that playing 30 minutes? I don't know how he does it, but he does. That's my Kirk Heinrich rant. Hopefully we don't have to see too much. Look, he's still going to get minutes. He's going to get minutes. It's not going to be enough for fantasy leagues. He's going to be the third point guard behind Aaron Brooks. Let's talk Aaron Brooks for a bit. He's getting drafted at pick 135, which seems really high.
Well, I was just going to ask you whether there's any chance that Etuan Moore takes that backup point guard role off of Aaron Brooks.
No, I don't think so. I don't mind Etuan Moore, but I don't think he's as good as Aaron Brooks. What about Jordan Crawford?
Jordan Crawford. Someone brought him came up the other day. Is that a long shot, or where did that come from?
There was a thing that he got signed. I'm pretty sure by the Bulls, non guaranteed contract. Really? I hope so.
Really?
I hope so. I need to see more Jordan Crawford in my life.
There you go. I haven't heard that one. But just on Aaron Brooks, he's another good streamer. And this minute, Derek Rose goes down, then he's one of these guys who you can add in 10 and 12 team leagues, and he can score and hit threes and hand out 4 or 5 assists. If you're in a deep roto league and you do draft Derek Rose and you're down sort of to 160, 180 deep, then Aaron Brooks is not a bad handcuff. The same in weekly leagues or even in head-to-head leagues with a games cap where you're not penalized by having Aaron Brooks on your roster. So, like, once again, like we're talking that 150 to 200 range, don't go and draft him in 10 and 12 team leagues. But, not a bad filling player.
I've got him ranked outside the top 180 at the moment. And I think some of the part of him getting drafted 135 is what I call the fantasy football factor of people handcuffing guys. And it doesn't work in 10 team leagues. It doesn't work in 12 team leagues. Look, that's not, maybe in a roto league you can do it, but I'd rather have someone who's got legit upside, not if upside. Aaron Brooks has got if upside. Like, if Derrick Rose gets hurt, then he's a good value. But you could say that about so many guys in the league. You could put the backup point guard of any team on the league. They're going to go out there and generally put up numbers in a situation where they're backup. You could put DJ Augustine in that thing. If Russell Westbrook gets injured, DJ Augustine's going to start, and he's going to put up big numbers. But you're not going to draft him and just stash him on your bench. You can't do it in a daily moves league, in a 10 or 12 team league. But a lot of people like getting handcuffs, and I do not recommend it in any sort of standard format, really, unless you've got, I said, but even those roto leagues, I still don't recommend doing that. What's your take on handcuffing outside your bedroom?
You leave what happens inside my bedroom alone. Generally not a big fan of it. I've just given a couple of examples there where you could do it in a deep roto league, a weekly league, or a league.
Fine. Deep league's fine because Brooks will have value on his own in those sort of formats. You get to a 16-team league, he's got value on his own in those formats. 14-team league, you're borderline. But in the 10 or 12, he has no value unless something happens.
No, definitely not. No, just wait till Derek Rose gets injured and follow us on Twitter, and then we'll tell him to go grab him or stream him through when there's a quieter night of games and the Bulls are playing.
I had a question come through today. Actually, it was on All Star 5, which I encourage you to go and check out at allstar5.com. We're currently doing beta testing for it at the moment, and it's going to be an interesting concept. What was that?
That's great fun. I love answering these questions.
Oh, it's awesome. Getting
the most diverse range of fantasy basketball questions I've ever seen.
We're getting smashed with questions as well. I can't believe the amount of people, and there's limited people out there testing it at the moment. The amount of questions that are coming through, I'm loving it. It's been a fantastic concept. So make sure you go across to allstar5.com and sign up. But the question I wanted to touch on, and I'm not going to say who sent it, but they said they're talking about quality games. And this sort of comes down to managing your bench and all that sort of stuff. Nothing Bulls related, but they said, do you take into consideration that Damian Lillard as a top 20 guy has 9 quality games, or Goran Dragic as a top 70 guy has 22 quality games? Do you value Dragic higher than Lillard because of quality games? Matt, I'll let you handle that one. I answered the guy on All Star 5 with my thoughts on it, but I want to hear your take on it.
You did answer it, and I answered it straight after you.
I
was just trying to find what I said, but in general, where the gap is that big between rankings, when we're talking Damian Lillard being a top 10, top 15 player, Dragic being a top 40, top 50 guy, there's no need to worry about the quality games aspect there. For me, quality games comes into play if you're picking the 120s and you've got two guys who are borderline, they've got the same production, they've got the same role, the same minutes, their playoff schedule, but then it comes down to their injury history, and then you go playoff schedule / quality games and then compare it and weigh it up that way. So the other point I made with that answer is the way the NBA have changed their schedule this year, and they've evened out the schedule across a number of days, I don't think quality games is going to have as big an impact as it has in the past. We've seen in like the Thursday night games, instead of 2 or 3 games, now we're going to see 5, 6, and 7 games on that night. Not going to see as many back-to-backs, not as many 4 games in 5 nights. So the schedule is still important to use, but in terms of quality games, I don't think they're going to be as important across the whole season as they have previously. Come playoff time, yes, but drafting this early and looking long term, I mentioned Jimmy Butler and the Bulls playoff schedule before, if you want to look that far in advance. But just to give you a scenario from last season, I drafted J.R. Smith when he was at the Knicks because the Knicks had a good playoff schedule. Halfway through the season, he got traded to the Cavs. They had the worst playoff schedule, so it didn't help me at all. So it's a long-term view, but it's probably the last determining factor when you're choosing between two guys, between pick 100 and 150.
I think the way to really frame it, to me, is when you're talking quality games, it's the last 3 guys on your bench where that makes a difference. Because, say you've got a full slate and there's 10 guys play, so your worst 3 guys don't play. So you want those worst 3 guys to play on less full days so you can actually get them into the action. So that's that. When you talk playoff schedule, it's more important for your first 3 or 4 picks. That's when if you're debating between, I don't have the numbers in front of me, you're debating between, say, Curry and Harden, and one played 10 playoff games and one played 7 playoff games, then you might sway to the one with the more playoff games in those top few picks, because so much can happen with those middle round, late round picks. They get traded, they go crap, they get injured, whatever, all that stuff can happen, and in the end it means nothing. So quality games for the end of your bench, playoff games for the start of your bench, but again, it's such a low factor in determining if you draft a player. Matt, who's your favorite player on this team?
That's a good question. I like watching Derek Rose when he's attacking the rim and being aggressive. I don't like watching him when he's chucking up 3-point shots from beyond the perimeter and just brooking them off the backboard and the rim. Also love watching Pau Gasol. He's just, I listened to the Grizz podcast when you and someone, who was it? Sorry. I can't remember now.
The Grizzlies. It was, Matt Moore from CBS Sports.
Matt Moore, that's right. Talking about Marc Gasol and, the way he plays basketball, and you can just learn so much about the game by watching him. That's the same with Pau. He's just a brilliant player to watch. So they're, my two, and I'm sure this season Nikola Mirotic will be involved in that trio as well.
My favorite player on the Bulls is Derrick Rose. I know that there's been a lot negative things happen with him recently. It's not. I still love him. He's still one of my favorite players. I know that he's been cut down a lot by injuries, and there's been off the court stuff and all this sort of stuff, but he's still my favorite player on this team. Pau Gasol is fantastic. I love watching Pau Gasol play as well. You can't help but admire what he does when he goes out on the court and the way he plays offensively. He is such an underrated player. For as stupid as that sounds, he is so underrated as a player. Just fantastic to watch it. I'm so glad he had this sort of late career resurgence in Chicago after that last season in LA when he was miserable, he was not happy, he was not playing well, and now he's come back to peak Pau Gasol, which is fantastic to see. What about your favorite all-time player on this team, Matt?
Favorite all-time player? That's the easiest question you've ever asked me, mate. It's got to be the man himself, Luke Shenshin, doesn't it?
Yep, of course. How could anyone go with anyone else apart from Luke Shenshin?
Nah, definitely Michael Jordan. Yours has got to be Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen as well, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. I could throw out a funny name. I could say it was Corey Blunt, but it's clearly Michael Jordan. And all you have to do, if you want to look at stupid stat lines, Michael Jordan's the king of stupid stat lines. Like Kareem, I mentioned the other night, there was something happening with him. There were some crazy numbers. Larry Bird's ones were out of control. But Michael Jordan's are the stuff of, well, obviously he's a legend, but his stat lines are the stuff of just amazingness. And some of these happened before he won a title. Look, his third season in the league, 37 points a game. Yeah, that's pretty good. 5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, almost 3 steals, 1.5 blocks a game, 48% field goal shooting, 86 from the free throw line. He had a stretch of 5 seasons where the worst he shot from the field was 52%. And all those seasons, he scored over 30 points a game. We're talking a guy shooting 52% minimum on minimum 22 attempts. And 30 points and 6 rebounds and 5 assists and over 2.5 steals and a block a game and a huge free throw percentage. You talk about having the advantage of having pick one in drafts. You had the pick one back then in any of Michael Jordan's prime. Forget about it. He was putting up crazy, and imagine that he was a decent 3-point shooter, because he wasn't. Well, he didn't take many of them. He got a lot better as his career went on. He had a couple of seasons where he hit them at a higher rate and converted more threes. But even when he was 39 years old, he averaged 20 points a game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.5 steals at 39.
And I like this one. In his rookie season, he was the second best fantasy player in the game.
Yeah, that's out of control.
It's behind Larry Bird. So imagine if you drafted Larry Bird and then you were down into the 50s, 60s, 70s, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, Michael Jordan, I'll him. You're not a bad pick at this stage. I'll give the rookie a shot. And then he goes out and he's the second best player. It's like drafting Anthony Davis and then drafting Carl Anthony Towns at pick 65, and you get the first and second best player in the game.
And he comes out as a rookie and goes 28, 6.5, and 6 with 2.4 steals on 52 and 85%. Yeah. Like, it's out of control, his numbers. And in
his second season, he only played 18 games.
Yeah, that was the broken foot season.
And then in 94-95, he only played 17 games. Yep. So take those two seasons out, but for 10 straight seasons, he was either the first or second best fantasy player in the game.
Yep. It's crazy. Like, we all know Michael Jordan. We all know how good he is. He's the guy who brought me into the NBA. And for many of you guys watching and listening, you'd say the same thing. Fantastic. Scottie Pippen, though, very, very underrated. He's close to a top 15, top 20 player of all time. He was a great fantasy player in his own right. When Jordan sat out those couple of seasons, he was a top five fantasy guy. He had other top 10 finishes. He just was able to do everything defensively. Again, his rebounds and assists are almost, they almost mirror Jordan. 6.5 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Yeah, 7. He had a season in 91-92, 21 points, 7.7 rebounds, 7 assists, 1.9 steals, and 1.1 blocks a game on 51% and 76% shooting. Like Scottie Pippen, if he was on any other team, imagine the aura that would be around Scottie Pippen for what he was able to do. He was fantastic. He was clearly shadowed by Jordan, but he was a superb player. But what I did tweet out, Matt, is who's my favorite Bulls player aside from MJ and Pippen? Because they're the two obvious picks. Who do you think it is?
Luke Shencher.
Yeah, you're not the only person to mention that today, which Mark Karanzoulis mentioned Luke Shencher, and it wasn't quite Luke Shencher.
Luke Longley.
No, but more than one person mentioned Luke Longley, and I do appreciate Luke Longley for playing. He was horrible in Minnesota. Like, he was disgusting in Minnesota, Luke Longley, but he was fantastic for Chicago, a team that never really had a good center. He was able to get himself into a couple of championships, provide a key role, but he's not my favorite player. Randall Wilkes on Twitter, at Randall_Wilkes, knocked it on the head, and it's Tony Kukoc. He was my favorite Bull apart from those guys. I loved what he was able to do. He was very effortless on the court. He could score, again, like Jordan and like Pippen. He could score. He could set up guys. He could pass. He could hit threes. I just enjoyed watching him play. I liked his left-handedness. I liked his ability to glide to the rim. I liked the fact that Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen scared the shit out of him in the Olympics and just pestered him completely. I don't know why that makes me like him more, because they just destroyed him in the 92 Olympics. I liked a lot of things. You know what? I was a big fan of playing with Tony Kukoc on NBA Live 95 as well. Don't know why that really factors into it, but I did like playing with him in that game back in the day on the old Sega Mega Drive. Who do you have? Do you have anyone else apart from Luke Shencher?
No. You're done? That's it.
Done.
Steve Kerr.
Yeah, Steve Kerr was pretty. John Paxson, BJ Armstrong, Bill Cartwright. There's so many guys on this team. That are Corey Blunt, Dennis, of course, Dennis Rodman, one of the just look. I haven't looked this up, but I want to look this up now. I want to look at Dennis Rodman's rebounding numbers. I'm sure they're out of control. Yep, they are. 18.7, 18.3, 17.3, 16.8, 14.9, 16.1, 15. That's like a 70 season stretch where the minimum that he had was 14.9 rebounds. Doesn't do anything else, and yeah, not a great fantasy player for that exact reason, but we talk about, he was like Reggie Evans, but a lot better than Reggie Evans. He was just rebounds and rebounds and rebounds. I think we're done, Matt.
That's insane. There's just one final piece of business that you and I have to discuss. Oh, now, I threw it on Twitter a week or a week and a half ago about who wants to see a S-Man Sports versus a Red Rock punting debate. You haven't declined. You haven't accepted. 2 weeks from now, do you accept my challenge at the first ever Red Rock debate around punting in head-to-head legs?
This sounds like a WWE interview. I feel like I need Mean Gene Okerlund here next to me. I'll tell you something, Matt. I accept your challenge.
Bring it on.
Let's go. So we're gonna debate the merits of punting in head-to-head leagues. So you're going to have people staunchly on your side, mate. You're going to have people staunchly on my side. But I'll give you a bit of a spoiler. I'm not completely against your style.
Oh, here we go.
I'm not. Yes. I'll throw this out there. Both styles can win. So that means that one is not 100% right.
That is correct. We'll agree on that. I can't remember what I was going to say. Oh, by that stage, then we'll have competed in three head-to-head leagues, the Listener League, our Dynasty League, and we've got another one coming up, the Superstars of Fantasy League.
Oh, yes.
That will draft on Sunday week, our time. So you'll be able to come along with your teams. I'll bring my teams. You can bring your stats. You can bring whoever you want in your corner. I'll have a nice diva next to me, and we'll do it.
Sounds good. I look forward to that debate. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention, Matt, before we go, is I teased it a little bit earlier. I mentioned the Red Rock Roto League. Head across and leave a comment on this YouTube video if you are interested in joining that. The other thing I wanted to do, and it's something I've been debating, I still don't know if I'm going to do it yet, but I want to do a league, probably a head-to-head league, that involves no standard categories. Every category is different. So we're talking about maybe three-point percentage, two-point percentage, assists to turnovers, steals to turnovers, double-doubles, personal fouls, field goals made, free throws missed, whatever it is, but something that doesn't include any of the standard nine categories. I want to hear if people are interested in that at all.
Facial hair to body hair ratio.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to track, but I'm happy to include it if you can find a reputable stat tracker for that.
Tattoos, plus, minus.
Whatever. It's still in its infancy, but I want to know if people will be interested in a completely non-standard fantasy league. So no standard categories at all. The actual categories are still up for debate. This is still in its infancy, as I said, this idea. But I want to know if people would actually be interested in playing in a league with no standard categories. So if you are, let me know. You can do that by Twitter, whatever. Just let me know if you think, yeah, that's an interesting idea, or Josh, you've lost it. You're on crack. You've been up for too long. Work out, you know, get your life in order. Maybe there's an intervention required. But that's something that I have got in my head. The Red Rock Roto League will be happening. So let me know if you're interested in that. And this other one, the non-standard Red Rock League, is another option. I can't get enough of fantasy basketball, as you can probably tell. And we're probably going to be doing some interesting daily fantasy leagues throughout the season as well. So there'll be a lot of that happening. Matt, have you got your next positional tiers article coming out soon, correct?
It is. My power forward positional tiers will be out in the next 24 to 48 hours, hopefully, over at hashtagbasketball.com. So my point guards, shooting guards, and small forwards are already up if you want to check them out. And then my centers will be out next week. And so yeah, find them there. Follow me on Twitter at SmanSports. Also, I have joined on with Moneyball, who will be doing our Australian and New Zealand DFS NBA. They're doing NFL currently. But that's something to look forward to as well. So, plenty happening, and yeah, it'll be full on between now and the start of the season.
Interesting you mentioned Moneyball, Matt. I might have something happening with them as well at some point. We'll have to wait and see. But they are going to change the game here in Australia with DFS offerings for NBA. So I really can't wait to get involved in that. Thank you, Matt, for coming on. I look forward to talking to you again soon. You got any other drafts coming up?
No. Now, the next one I have is the one that we're doing, the Superstars of Fantasy, in 2 weeks' time, or Sunday week, I should say.
Yep.
And then I know I've got one. We always have a draft the weekend before the season starts. So that's a good one. And then I've still got at least another one or two that are still to be decided.
Cool. Sounds good. Follow Matt on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_bball. I'd like you to. I encourage you to go ahead and find the podcast on iTunes, subscribe, and leave a ranking and a review. It is always fantastic when you do that. I do appreciate it significantly. Check out Basketball Monster and, of course, Hardwood Paroxysm, where the podcast has a new home as well. So check out all the articles that go up on Hardwood Paroxysm, as well as all the podcasts that are available in their pod center. Over there, there is some great stuff that goes up there. The Over and Back podcast put out another one today, debating the top 50 merits of a player who completely has slipped my mind. There's a Timberwolves podcast that went out. The Friendly Bounce guys are doing their season preview podcasts. A lot going on at Hardwood Paroxysm. Matt, thank you again. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Josh. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. See ya.